Court is back in session.
All right, go ahead and be seated. Good morning. Next case on calendar is docket number 53360, Reno Newspapers, Inc. versus Givens. Counsel, are you ready to proceed? All right. Okay. Would you like to reserve any time?
I would, Your Honor. Approximately 3 minutes of my time.
All right, 3 minutes it is.
Mr. Chief Justice, associate members of the court, Mr. Spencer, I'm Scott Glogovac, and I am counsel in this case for the appellant, Reno Newspapers, Inc., which does business as the Reno Gazette Journal. This is a case, an important case of first impression on two general levels under the Nevada Public Records Act. The first level raises the general inquiry as to whether the threshold issue in any public records dispute is whether the documents in question must be public in nature and therefore subject to the Nevada Public Records Act. And I think for reasons I'll get into, I think the answer to that question is yes. And if the answer is yes, then there are two important sub-issues in this case. The first being what constitutes a public record, and then secondly, in the context of this case, where we're talking about emails that are contained on government-issued accounts, how do you apply that public records analysis to that specific context? The second area of first impression in this case is whether Vaughn indexing or some similar requirement to Vaughn indexing should be imposed in public records disputes. And then a sub-issue as to that area is, when does the Vaughn indexing requirement arise? Does it arise only after litigation has been filed? If I could address the first area then, the issue of public records. I think as to that issue, there can't be any dispute that in order for records to be accessible by the public, they must be public in nature. And that's obvious from the statute itself. NRS 239.010 specifically states that public records of a governmental agency must be accessible to the public or provided to the public unless they're otherwise declared by law to be confidential. So I don't think there's any question that the statute only applies to public records. This then gets us into the next two sub-issues that I talked about, the first being what constitutes a public record. The statute itself doesn't define what public record means. The statute also doesn't define what the term public means. And this court has not definitively rendered a pronouncement on what public record means. However, in the DR Partners case, Justice Maupin did indicate that the purpose underlying the Public Records Act is to facilitate public information about vital government activities. And with that general purpose of the public records statute, I think it's fairly clear, and this court can recognize, in our view in this case, that in order for a record to be considered public and therefore subject to the Public Records Act, there has to be some form of nexus between the document in question and government activities, activities of a government agency, functions of a government agency, same things as to a government employee.
Counsel, should we...
Go ahead, Councilman.
Should we be defining this, or should we leave it to the legislature who set forth this chapter?
I think it would be appropriate for that would be a statutory interpretation process for this court.
Within that is, if we define it, should it be defined with limited construction or expansive construction?
No, it would be with an expansive construction, and that was the next point I was going to make, Your Honor, and that is that there should be some nexus between the document in question and something about the government. But the analysis has to be done liberally. In other words, it has to be done in favor of public disclosure once that analysis is undertaken.
Well, even the legislature has already mandated that under the Open Records Act itself as a matter of statutory construction. But the nexus in D.R. Horton was the use of cell phones.
Right.
Thus, does one conclude that the use of computers, which generate emails, causes all emails, whether private or public, to be subject to public disclosure?
And with all respect to our record, I think that Justice Hardesty means the D.R. Park case, not the D.R. Horton.
I'm sorry. Too many D.R.s.
Right.
Thank you, Justice Sadia, for the clarification.
I mean, that really is the one of the two central issues in this case. And I can tell you that the issue has been litigated in other courts. And one thing that most of the courts, I would say probably the most uniform thing about the litigation in this area is that courts have rejected a per se analysis. And you might find that funny coming from me being in the position that I'm in, but that is the kind of the general notion coming out of the cases, is that there is no per se, in other words, the fact that an email in and of itself is on a state-issued account doesn't mean that that email is automatically public.
So you would concede that where an email is generated on a state-issued account, the Daunray overlay should apply?
I would concede that the Daunray overlay should apply, yes, Your Honor. And but what I do want to reserve is this. I mean, that's in the context of this case and for our purposes here today. Technology is changing. The operations of government are changing and ever-evolving. And it may be that at some point it would be appropriate to consider every single email on any government computer in any office per se a public record.
And I understand that argument. Frankly, if we did that, it's pretty easy, you know, rule to follow then, like it versus the, you know, the having in-camera inspections and some of these other things that happen. One of my concerns is with public officials in general, counsel, is if we did that, though, or we had this Vaughn Index rule adopted, what would prohibit, not the mainstream publications like the Reno Gazette Journal, the Review Journal, but maybe bloggers and all that, making constant demands upon public officials to do Vaughn indexes on all their emails and all. Should that enter into the equation, or would the First Amendment trump that potential burden?
Well, I think the First Amendment would trump that potential burden. But let me first say that goes initially to the heart of when the Vaughn index requirement arises. If a case is in litigation, there should be no question that a Vaughn index ought to be provided. Otherwise, there's just no possibility for meaningful adversarial debate over the issue. The requesting party, knowing nothing about the records at issue, has exactly what happened to us here, has no opportunity to inform the court of its position as to whether or not documents should be are actually public.
Mr. Glogovac, there's another statutory rule of construction, and that is the government has the burden to demonstrate confidentiality in public record litigation. Does that support your argument for a Vaughn index?
Yeah, that's really that statute has been argued in this case by the state to apply only in the litigation context. But the decisional law of this court has been that the burden rests, without reference to litigation, the burden rests on the public agency to demonstrate the non-accessibility of the record. And that's why in this case, that's why we asked for a pre-litigation Vaughn index or a log similar to that.
The district court on page 2 of its order, however, referenced or said this. The master's report further notes that the index was not required by the petitioner for purpose of making their argument for disclosure, and that such an index would disclose otherwise confidential information. Could you articulate for the court how the Vaughn index would have enabled or would have assisted you in making your argument, or whether the district court is in error in its conclusion that the master's report said you didn't need it in order to make your arguments here?
Yeah, and I'm not sure how the master reached that conclusion. We didn't even know until we got to court on the hearing that was held in this case how many emails we were talking about. Was only at that time, as a record was being made by the state, that there were 100-something emails involved.
I thought you had communication from at least two individuals on the governor's staff regarding the number of emails, in fact, correcting your request to subsume certain emails.
No, Your Honor. What happened was is originally the request was made for all emails sent from or received by Governor Gibbons' email account during a 6-month period of time. A spokesman for the governor's office said that's oppressive, it's unduly burdensome, and requested that it be narrowed down. At that point, the reporter narrowed it down to 10 individuals. but at no time prior to the litigation were we informed as to the number of the emails. Had no idea. And it was actually my urging prior to suit being filed to the governor's office, look, just give us a log of these emails. It's your burden to demonstrate non-accessibility. All you've done is tell us that whatever emails exist out there are either not public or are privileged on various fact-based grounds, like the deliberative process privilege, and therefore we don't have to provide them. My response was, but you have the burden, and you need to particularize this so that we can assess whether it's right. We may not have a fight here.
Mr. Golovac, can I ask you, I'm sorry to interrupt you, I thought you were finished. What about this hypothetical, though? Let's say the governor had sent out emails and texts and all that with a personal cell phone, and he paid for it himself and all like that. It's not a government. Government has nothing to do with that. Is that all private under DR Partners then? Or if it's it's a government business, and it'll be a way to get that information?
Your Honor, there'd be a little bit easier situation for the governor in that situation if it were his personal cell phone. No question about that. No tax dollars went to paying for the cost of that mm-hmm. personal cell phone, and he sent out text messages or emails or placed phone calls. Presumptively, I think in that situation, the records would be personal and not subject to the Public Records Act. Mm-hmm. But a newspaper, if it had information or if there was some reason to believe that he was conducting business on his personal phone, sending text messages, for instance, could make that request. And the request could be refined to any text messages sent on your phone to, and it could list the individuals or it could list topic. So just because a public official uses a private cell phone or, say, a private BlackBerry to conduct public information doesn't allow them to then turn around, or that official to then turn around and shield that from public disclosure.
Thank you.
But what we really believe this court should do in the email context is adopt basically three principles, and this is what, in this area of this case, we're asking the court to do.
And I'm going to ask you to cite the authority upon which you rely for seeking our enactment of those criteria.
I will. Understanding that this is a emerging area of the law with not a lot of authority.
Some states have addressed it, counsel.
Right. Okay. Number one, that the government is not unilaterally empowered to decide whether an email is public or private. And the reason I bring that up is because in the state's brief in this case on page 18, and they also made this point before the court below, they write, if it is not, meaning the email, if it is not a public document, it is not subject to the Public Records Act, and the public, including the Reno Gazette Journal, has no right to know anything about the document, even its existence. And that's the point that they made in a brief in this case. And I would say to that point, that in effect would create the government, which probably has less interest in producing public information or making its documents available, as the ultimate and final gatekeeper of what is produced to the public. Someone in a government office sits back under this standard and just decides, well, this is personal in nature, and so we don't have to produce it. That cannot be the rule. And my authority for that, Your Honor, would be that the Nevada Public Records Act encourages openness in government and certainly does not empower government officials to make unreviewable decisions like this. No, I'm not aware of a case directly on point that would controvert their position, but that's the authority I have for that, Your Honor. Secondarily, then, our argument would be, and what we would urge this court to rule, is that if there is an email on a state-issued account, that email is presumptively public. It's presumptively public. A state email account was used to generate that item. It's presumptively public. And the burden of proof is on the government to establish that it is not public. And for that, I would cite two authorities that are actually in the state's brief, the Griffiths versus Penal County case specifically states that the burden is on the government to establish that a document is not public. And that's an Arizona Supreme Court case that's been relied on by the state. So again, then, there's a presumption of public nature of something that's used, been generated on a government email account. And keep in mind, there are other alternatives that public officials have, and Justice Gibbons just referenced it, using your own phone or your own BlackBerry or your own personal email account to generate communications as opposed to the government account. But if you do it on the government account, it's presumptively public. And then the third thing is that when we get into the analysis of whether a document is public or not, keeping in mind the burden is on the state, the analysis has to be content-driven and context-driven. And if I can explain what I mean by that, look at the content, and it may just be personal in nature. Let's meet for lunch, or this will confirm our lunch meeting. But then put it in the context. You have a situation where a government official is accused of having improper conduct with a private business person and steering business to that particular individual. Public official denies any contact for months or for years with that particular individual, but then sends that person an email confirming a lunch. In that context, that otherwise private email would take on public overtures or public implications. And so we would ask that to be the third step in this analysis. So again, may I finish this remark?
Finish your thought, yes.
Okay. My thought on this would be that in this context then, that if an email exists on a government computer, it's presumptively public. The state does not act as a gatekeeper. The government doesn't act as a gatekeeper as to public versus private. Burden is on the government to establish the exemption or the non-public nature of the document, and then any analysis must look not only at content but at context.
All right, Mr. Glogovac, you chewed up your rebuttal time, but I'm going to allow you 2 minutes because we did address you with a few questions.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, I'm Jim Spencer, Chief of Staff, Attorney General Catherine Cortez Masto, here today on behalf of Respondent Governor Jim Gibbons. Good morning. What this Court has given us is DR Partners for a standard to apply to what a public records is. Unfortunately, the legislature has not provided us that definition. DR Partners said that a public record would be, at least the purpose of the Public Records Act is to ensure the public has access to vital government activities. One court looked at this was Griffiths. Griffiths, like this court, did not have a definition of public record. That court looked at a nexus, a substantial nexus to government activities in making its decision. It remanded the case back to the district court to look at the records under review, emails, under that standard. In this case, Judge Russell relied on DR Partners and also looked at the State Records Committee policy on emails. The judge relied on DR Partners, and if you look at DR Partners and the policy that was adopted by the Records Committee, they're very similar, if not the same. The records policy does not require a agency to keep records that are personal, and we've heard today that personal records are not public, and other kinds such as transitory and duplicative records.
But record retention is different from a statutory obligation to produce records. Wouldn't you grant me that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Record retention is distinct from a duty to produce them under the Public Records Act. Those are two different questions.
Well, that brings us back to the threshold question of whether or not a record is a public record at the first instance. That has to be addressed first before you can engage in the balancing of the presumption of openness, even. And that's what the district court did, was to say, is it public or not? And if it's not public, then it's not subject to disclosure and it's not subject to the presumption of openness. Difficult call, but the cases that have looked at this, the Griffiths case and the Pulaski case, Pulaski County case, have ruled that personal records are not public, and therefore they're not subject to disclosure. The other thing that I think is important for the court to know is the threshold requires us to look at whether records are protected at the outset or not. This is the same kind of analysis that is engaged in when we look at the Bradshaw balancing test. For instance, in Bradshaw, Judge Whitehead ordered in-camera review of those records to determine whether or not, though public in that case, those records were privileged or not. Were they protected? In this case, as in Griffiths, Griffiths used the same analysis and said that we do this for our balancing test. It's common in our courts to use in-camera review. So the court there as we did, as the Judge White did in Bradshaw, said that this record is protected. In this case, we have to determine whether or not it's even public before we get to the protected status. The argument that the newspaper makes that a Vaughn index needs to be done, there's no authority to say that that's mandatory. There's no authority at all. There's the authority in the two cases cited in our brief that says that you don't use a Vaughn index. The judge below indicated that a Vaughn index would disclose otherwise confidential information, at least personal, if not the other kinds that he determined to be public. That's not required. That would be the same thing as requiring us to turn over public records that are being challenged for their protection under privileges to the newspaper so the newspaper could agree or not agree. By then, you've lost the protection. So the analysis here is the same. The court has to determine what is public, what is not, and to do that properly, it has to be done in an in-camera review. In this case, with very short emails, as the district court judge said, there is no way we can do this without disclosing potentially personal information and therefore giving the newspaper everything that it asked for without really handing over the emails.
So, Mr. Spencer, is your argument that in response to a public records request, the government can simply say no?
No, Your Honor.
To identify the existence of the document, they don't even have to say that it is there. Is that what you're saying?
The government didn't say that in this case, Your Honor. The answer is no to that. What the government did in this case is come up.
Well, for purposes of a rule enunciated in this case, what should the government be required to do upon receipt of a public records request that identifies the individual, a time frame, a subject matter?
In a typical request, Your Honor, if it's for one document, it makes it pretty easy. This document is being withheld, it's not public because it's personal. But when you have a wholesale request of 5 months of emails, it makes it more difficult without identifying the information in the emails that are still subject to review by the court as to whether it's public or not. So what the respondent did in this case was to say these documents...
I'm sorry, Mr. Spencer, we may not be communicating. I'm asking what the rule should be when the government is confronted with a request from the public for a record and they specify a time frame and individuals and a subject matter, what should the government's response be under the Open Records Act?
The government's response, Your Honor, should be that it is either public or not, or privileged or not, which is what the governor did in this case.
So in doing so, does it not necessarily follow that it at least identifies we have an email dated March 13th, 2000 and whatever, and we believe it's private?
I think, Your Honor, that that is not a public record under the standards set forth in the records policy, that we wouldn't have to recognize that.
What if the government is contending that the document is the subject of deliberative process privilege? Should the government be required to say, we have an email dated March 13th and something, and it is not subject to disclosure under the deliberative process privilege? Because, as you know, in this case, the judge found 42 emails were not producible under either the transitional or deliberative process privilege. Should the government be required to at least state the privilege under which it relies for not producing the document?
Yes, it should, Your Honor. It should state the privilege, but now we're into a...
How's that any different than a Vaughn index?
Because that Vaughn index will identify virtually the subject matter of that email. If it's a private personal email, it shouldn't even be disclosed, Your Honor. It's not a public record. The court's already heard that today.
Personal or private, it's not subject to the deliberative process privilege. It's personal or private. The judge found 60-some other emails to be not producible under the personal and private privilege.
And those emails, Your Honor, were either transitory, which is one of the categories in the policy, or there were a deliberative process.
It's an interesting word, transitory. Transitory is something that arose out of the destruction of records regulation. That's not found in any common law or any case law or any open records statute, is it?
But it meets the DR partner standard, Your Honor. If it's not vital governmental information, then it wouldn't be public under that standard. As I said, that's what we have to work with. And to address your other issues, these were reviewed in camera by the district court, and we did provide to the district court on each one of those emails what we thought the privilege or protection was.
One of the questions, one final question, I'm sorry to predominate this, but DR Partners, not DR Horton, says in its rule, to ascertain whether the documents at issue are pre-decisional, the court must first be able to pinpoint an agency decision or policy to which these documents contributed. The agency bears the burden of establishing the character of the decision, the deliberative process involved, and the role played by the documents in the course of that process. Reviewing the district court's order on page 3, it declares that 42 emails are subject to the deliberative process privilege, but there is no analysis at all under DR Partners of the three elements I just mentioned. How does this court review the decision by the district court to maintain 42 emails confidential?
The court had the emails, Your Honor, and applied deliberative process jurisprudence to that. Is it something that is a decision that has not been released yet? Is it a pre-decisional conversation? And the court had that argument and was briefed to the court, and the court in camera provided and applied that standard to each of the emails, whether it was personal.
But the question process that's being raised on this appeal is, how do the parties then litigate the accuracy or inaccuracy or the error or non-error of the district court in making that determination, if it doesn't know?
Well, the same as it does for any protection argued in the balancing test, Your Honor. It's in-camera review, and at the end of the day, it's the judge that makes that determination whether or not there's an adversarial proceeding. And in the Bradshaw case.
So should this court look at all 42 emails and make its own assessment as to whether or not the district court did it correctly?
Well, Your Honor, I wish it was a different standard, but it is a de novo review as to whether a record's a confidential record or a public record.
Sorry, Chief.
Go ahead.
That's all.
Okay.
The policy at issue here is rationally related to the purpose of the Public Records Act as expressed by this court. I would respectfully request that this court uphold the decision of the district court judge, which granted in part and denied in part petitioner's petition. Thank you.
Mr. Spencer, if I could ask you one question. Mr. Golovac, I brought up the point about the burden on public officials maybe in preparing these indexes. And does the First Amendment trump that? I think his response is yes, the First Amendment trumps that. So you just, it's one of those things you just need to do if you're a public official. Do you have a comment on the burden issue and how that plays with the First Amendment?
Your Honor, first of all, I don't think that Vaughn index is required. If the court says it is required, then we would have possibly a serial request for Vaughn indexes on emails. And with the thousands of emails that we all know exist in state government, that would be very burdensome. And I don't think there is a First Amendment right to have a Vaughn index.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to use the two additional minutes that were allowed to me to answer Justice Hardesty's question as to what the rule ought to be in terms of how these situations are handled, whether there should be a Vaughn Index requirement and how that proceeds. First thing is that, and we believe this court ought to underscore that it is inappropriate for a governmental agency to respond to a request for public records with a blanket denial or blanket denials, such as what happened here. This court should impose a requirement that the governmental agency respond with a particularized showing as to each document that comes within the scope of the request. And this would be whether the basis for not producing it is that it isn't public in the first place, or that there is some confidentiality exclusion or provision that exists in the law. And in the ordinary case, there may be exigent, unusual circumstances, but in the ordinary case, the means for providing that particularized showing should be a Vaughn Index. And when it's emails, the Vaughn Index would describe the following: the person who sent the email, all recipients, the date of the email, the general subject matter of the email, and why the document is not publicly accessible. Again,
Council, couldn't we just, in this instance, without going so far as to impose a Vaughn Index requirement, simply remand this case for consideration by the district court according to the DR partners standard?
I think that, as Mr. Spencer pointed out, I believe the district court thinks that it already addressed this case under that standard, and for whatever reason did not allow the Reno Gazette Journal information about the emails, Your Honor, that would let us then make our arguments under
the clearly we could point to the language that Justice Hardesty so appropriately quoted and say, we do not believe, under the abuse of discretion standard, that you did what you were supposed to do, and therefore you abused your discretion. Go back and do it the way DR Partners tells you to do it.
I think this is a very important case, Your Honor, and one of the reasons why we appealed this case is to – may I continue, Your Honor?
Yes.
One of the reasons why we appealed this case was to get to the very thing that happened here, and that is to ensure that in public records cases that the party seeking production of the records can meaningfully participate in the process. So I think that this is an excellent opportunity for this court to weigh in on the Vaughn Index requirement and ensure that's part of our jurisprudence in public records cases. I think it's crucial to that, Your Honor. And just if I may make one final remark, or if I run out of my
time. All right.
Okay. And that is that the difference between the sides on the Vaughn Index here, what underlies that is what each side sees as the purpose for the index. The state's position was that the purpose for the index was to assist Judge Russell in making his determination as to what's publicly accessible. And it was only 104 documents. You don't need a Vaughn Index. He could do it with the discovery commissioner. Our position is the Vaughn Index is there to guarantee the adversarial process is in full and that both sides can weigh in on the case. And if that's the purpose, which all the cases say, for a Vaughn Index, then it shouldn't matter what the volume of the records is.
Any other questions? All right, this case will stand submitted. Counsel, thank you both. And the court will stand in recess until the next call of the court.
All rise.